Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and this episode is Q&A number 96, and today I'm joined by fellow scientific triathlon coach James Teagle. Before we get into the question we have for today with James, big thanks to our sponsors. First, we have Precision Hydration that you can find on precisionhydration.com. They make electrolyte products that you can match to your individual sweat rate and sweat sodium content to make sure that you adequately replace the sodium that you lose, sodium being the most important electrolyte to replace through sweating. And this becomes more and more important the longer the events or workouts become, and also the hotter the environmental temperature. On precisionhydration.com, you can take a free online sweat test, which consists of just 10 questions in a quiz format based on your sweating experience personally. And that will give you a free hydration strategy that you can use in racing and training to give you a really good idea of where to start when it comes to dialing in your hydration strategy and really get it spot on. Precision Hydration always tell you that this is not the be-all end-all, but it's a perfect starting point to start experimenting around and trialing around. And then you, once you have that starting point, it will be so much easier to find what is actually the perfect spot for you to be in. You can get 15% off your order of electrolytes with the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW15. And thank you to Roka that you can find on roka.com. As you're probably aware, Roka started out as a wetsuit manufacturer. The idea was to basically create the fastest wetsuit in the world. It started in a garage in Texas. But today, Roka obviously, in addition to wetsuits, make trisuits, swimskins, and many other lines of triathlon and endurance sports equipment. But also, in the last few years, they have made fantastic headway in the eyewear industry with both performance sunglasses and more recently, starting with prescription glasses. The same culture of innovation that led to Roka's Maverick wetsuits being worn by some of the best swimmers in the world of triathlon. It's also present in the eyewear engineering and manufacturing with, for example, things like Geico anti-slip technology, superb material with super light products as a result, and exceptional optics. You can even update your prescription right from your home, from your computer, with a vision test that is available through Roka's website when you're going for the prescription glasses or sunglasses. You can get 20% off your order of Roka eyewear or any of their triathlon or endurance sports products, of course, with the promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. Now, without any further ado, here's Q&A number 96 with Coach James Teagle. Welcome back to the podcast, James. Good morning to you. It's nice to have you here.
Hi, yeah. Good morning. It's nice to be back and nice to speak to you as always, Michael.
Cheers. And let's just start by rereading the question so we know what we're answering and the listeners know what we're answering as well. This one is from David, who asks, Hi, I'm a longtime listener of the show. I'm 42 years old from the northwest of England. With no triathlons this year for me, I decided to train my weakness, which is the bike. So at the moment, I'm doing a crit training plan. While I know this isn't in any way geared towards the steady state efforts of a triathlon, will the greater top end capacity allow room for my FTP to grow? I seem to have stagnated recently, and I'm hoping a new stimulus may give me a bump. David. So we broke this up into a few different discussion points. And the first one is, from the question, it's not really clear whether David currently only does bike training and only focuses on that crit plan, or he does that but also has the swimming and running around it. So without making any assumptions, what are your thoughts around focusing only on one or maybe two other disciplines? Let's say that in this case, he is only focusing on the bike to tackle that. What would your opinion be on that, James?
So, yeah, like you say, without making any assumptions, I think we have to take two things into account. So it is very athlete dependent, in my opinion. So the first point would be actually, is athlete specific? Get that word out. It's also goal specific. So when I say athlete specific, I mean, you know, you got to look at your sporting background and actually what your strengths and weaknesses are. So, for example, if you came from a college swimming background, you're probably not going to benefit that much from doing, you know, high proportions of swimming. actually when you look at your races. So you're probably better off, yes, focusing a bit more time on the bike and, you know, probably spending slightly less time on the swim because it's not going to hold you back so much. You've also got to look at the actual dependency on how much time you have. You know, if you've only got 20 hours, if you've got 20 hours a week, you've got a lot more time to really focus on things. Whereas you've got 10 hours a week, you know, actually being specific is going to be rather hard because in my opinion, you still, when you're training for triathlons, got to keep in some running and some swimming. I would never advise an athlete really to take them out, unless maybe you're right at the start of your season, in which case, you know, because you're so far away from the event, you probably get away with it a bit more, but still that would be very rare to tell an athlete to do that. So yeah, looking at time availability as well, when you're looking at your athlete specific factors, and also actually how much stress can you handle? So, you know, if you can handle a lot of stress on the bike, for example, you're doing a big crit block and like this athlete is, you're doing a lot of crit style sessions as your specific type of training. Can you handle that whilst still maintaining your swim and run? And I think that's really important to look at as well. And then going on to the more goal specific things. So actually how far away from the event are you? You know, I've already covered this off, but actually I would, you know, if you're really going to focus on something, in my opinion, for most athletes, and, you know, this probably is, I'm probably going to shoot myself in the foot here because there's probably going to be athletes out there who are really, really, you know, outliers. But actually, you're probably better off doing it further away from race day so you can nail those race-specific processes. So, you know, you don't want to be doing this 4 weeks out, really focusing on your cycling and, you know, forgetting about your swimming and your running because, you know, they're going to be critical to the race as well. And then you got to look at the racing you're going to do. You know, is it drafting, non-drafting? You know, what's the competition? Is it sprint or is it an Ironman race? You know, actually, how important the different events are. Really, you know, cycling, swimming, and running really depends on what kind of racing you're doing. For example, if you're doing draft legal racing, focusing on cycling and not really focusing on swimming when swimming is, you know, still something that's, you know, important is going to be, you know, to your disadvantage. So again, I know not many listeners here will be draft legal, but actually, you know, if you go backwards in your swimming, so you go from front pack to second pack, but your cycling's improved, actually, how much is that going to help you? You know, and the same thing could be applied to anyone who's racing across, you know, different disciplines. So actually, if you are going for Ironman, but you're going for the win, you need to be pretty solid at all three events. If you're just doing for an Ironman, you're trying to get around and, you know, your bike is definitely going to limit you, then yes, focus on your bike because actually maybe you're already able to do the swim and the run without too many issues. I think that covers it off. I know I blabbered a lot there. Is there anything you want to add?
No, not really. I think that the thing that I want to just reemphasize, because you already mentioned it, I would also never completely take away any of the disciplines, like always have some sort of maintenance. And for somebody who doesn't train a lot, somebody who trains, let's say, five times per week, perhaps, like focusing on one discipline might look like three bike sessions per week and one swim and one run. Still have that one swim and one run. Don't take them away completely. And then you covered off a whole lot of different scenarios. So that's great because that gives the most amount of listeners some useful takeaway points. And in this case with David, he's obviously not racing this year. He writes so himself in the question. So that basically means that what you said there about don't do this close to your race, that he's got that covered. So it's a good time for him to potentially do this. But we still believe that that he shouldn't just let his swim and run go, still do swimming and running. So if we go into that, then we think that it might be a good idea, depending on the athlete and the goal and the time and so on, a good idea to focus more on one specific discipline, cycling in this example. So how much maintenance would you recommend doing on the other, and how would you like to do that maintenance?
Well, that is, you know, that is really dependent on the athlete, and again, really dependent on your event, and that's gonna be horrible listening to me, like, oh, stop saying that. But it really is. To give examples, you know, I've seen some very, very good athletes who have come into the sport and couldn't swim, but were fantastic runners. And actually, you know, they did take, you know, really take their run volume down a fair bit. and you know, not really focused on their cycling too much. So it's kind of maintenance. So maybe one session a week of running, you know, as a session. And then, you know, these guys are probably running 6-7 hours and then, you know, 2 to 3 hours of aerobic running around that whilst they focus on their swimming. And, you know, they really up their swim volume. Again, they weren't doing that near races. They're doing it a fair way out. But yeah, in percentages terms, you know, it really depends on how many hours you're doing. But, you know, if you're training 20 hours a week, then I think it's fine to do, you know, if your weakness is cycling, so maybe spend 20% of your time in the water, 6% of the time on your bike and 20% of the time on the run. But, you know, that's going to look a lot different to someone who's only training 10 hours a week. You know, they've still got to spend, you know, 25% of that is only 2.5 hours. So, you know, if you're spending 2.5 hours in a swim, I'd say, you know, and you want to be a decent athlete, I think that's important. You know, you might spend 5 hours on the bike and really focusing on that, and then another 2.5 hours on the run. But that's what it means when you say specific to me, and that's kind of what I'd say for an athlete as well. That specific, we're really focusing on cycling. You know, if we're doing, you know, 60% of our time rather than 50%, and maybe just distributing the stress to those events a bit more. So maybe actually they are just aerobic sessions. So your swimming is just aerobic with a couple of sprints, and your running is, like I say, one session which isn't too hard, and the rest is just aerobic. And actually, most of your intensity, you know, if you're like this guy is saying, he's doing a crit program, that's gonna be quite intense. So most of your intensity comes out on the bike because you've got to manage that stress as well. Actually, you can only manage a certain amount of stress in the week, and it's just depending on how you distribute that with the time you've got. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And by the way, that leads me to another question. For those listeners that may not know, what does a crit training program mean? Actually, can you describe what a crit event is and what the training might look like, just in as a very brief overview?
So a crit race is essentially a race with, it's a cycling race. It is a cycling race. It's a draft legal cycling race around a circuit or around, you know, maybe a town centre or around like a racing track. And typically they'd have a lot of sprinting out the corners. So it'd be tight corners and you're sprinting, and then you'd be going above FTP, and then you'd be going, you know, into that, you know, real anaerobic energy, you know, through to max anaerobic kind of zones out of the corners, and then you'd settle into just below FTP between them. So, you know, in the straights, and you'd do it repetitively. You know, you might spend an hour just basically sprinting, going easy, so like an extreme fartlek session. So that's what a crit program for me should be training you for, is actually it's going to involve a lot of time with efforts above FTP, and then maybe a bit of time with efforts, you know, slightly below FTP as well. That's what I'd understand a crit training program to be in this case. I know probably there's probably some other descriptions of it, but that's what I understand it to be, and that's how I describe a race anyway, a crit race, to be something where you're doing a lot of sprinting and then settling into just below FTP. And these races typically last, you know, maybe 45 minutes to an hour. That's obviously outliers, but that's how long they typically last.
Yeah, no, and I'd agree about what that program looks like. And I think one of the points that you mentioned there is that you mentioned maybe having one session on the run and some sprints in an aerobic swim. This is a point that I also made in my notes here, that I do think that you should include a little bit of intensity in the maintenance disciplines to get a stimulus, but not so much that it takes away from the work you're putting in the main focus discipline. You should, like, the priority when you are focusing on one discipline is very obviously going to be that main discipline, but specifically also the main sessions, the hard sessions of that discipline, to make sure that you can actually perform to your potential in those sessions. So I think that's sort of a balance to get right, because you might not want to, let's say you are running, I don't know, you're doing 2 shorter runs per week because you might be a time-strapped athlete and that's all you have time for if you're only trying to maintain the run and you're focusing on the bike. But then basically you want to have some intensity in one of the runs to get a little bit more bang for your buck. But you need to find that balance. You don't want to go out and smash yourself and make it a 45-minute time trial that will then make sure that you can't hit your power targets in the bike that you have planned for the next day, which is more important.
Yeah, that's certainly what I'd agree with that as well. So you're trying to balance the stress of a week so that you can tick those, you know, key sessions off in that specific discipline. But you also don't want to, it's maintenance, you don't want to go backwards really on swimming, you probably will a bit if you're far enough away from the event, and that's okay. But yeah, I think it's, you know, just balancing out the stress of a week to make sure that you can really hit those key sessions in that specific discipline. And that is athlete dependent. It depends on, you know, your background in the sport and actually how much stress you can manage. You know, if you've done endurance training for a long time, you can probably manage a bit more stress in those maintenance disciplines than someone who's, you know, not, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that, well, you mentioned it many times already, but how much time you have available is a key here. So I think for somebody who has less time available, then you might have to accept that you might go backwards a little bit, as you say, in those other disciplines, in the run and the swim. If you're training 8 to 10 hours per week, for example, and you want to focus on the bike, well, actually, that doesn't leave a whole lot of time to do swimming and running. But you should do a little bit, and you need to try to minimize the loss in those disciplines and then make sure that you get the most out of your bike training. Whereas if you are somebody who has 20 hours per week to train, then I agree, you don't really want to go backwards in those disciplines. You want to try to maintain them or at least get very close to maintaining your fitness level in them, and you still have enough time to focus on the bike there. So I have a couple of examples here with the sessions. Let's say you, like, a key session for you has been on the run 4x8 minutes at threshold. Maybe what you do in the maintenance period is you do 2 or 3x8 minutes instead of 4x8 minutes to sort of get a stimulus but not make it too taxing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that you'd be doing. Like you say, you're trying to make it so you're getting the stimulus, but you're not adding that. You're not overdoing it with the stress. Because actually, like I've said quite a few times already, you can only handle so much stress in the week, really. So you're just trying to balance out the amount of stress you're doing and actually with your goals. And yeah, as you said, and as I've already said, if you've got less time available, you're probably going to go a bit backwards slightly because the stress you've got or the time availability you've got is going to make it that actually you're going to have to focus a bit more and spend a bit more energy on those specific sessions, the area you're working on, rather than, you know, those areas that aren't key. And I think it definitely applies more to more beginner athletes than it does to advanced athletes. I think beginner athletes are going to struggle more with actually balancing out the time and the stress in the week than maybe an advanced athlete would. I think, you know, this is generalizing, but most advanced athletes, or, you know, those guys who've been training for a long time, probably have a better ability to handle that stress and therefore could, you know, maintain their sport, their disciplines to a greater level than someone who's just begun.
So what do you think a more beginner athlete should take into consideration if they are, let's say, focusing on the bike for a period and they're doing a little bit of running and swimming around that, but how do you think they should basically just approach this and think about this? Should it be that they, yeah, like in terms of intensity specifically intensity, I guess, should they maybe like reduce the intensity in the focus discipline to make sure they can balance it out and just basically accept that it's going to take them a bit longer to get the bike back up to the level or up to the level where they want it to be? Or should they like maximize the intensity they can do in the main discipline and maybe reduce it in those maintenance disciplines and accept more of a backward progression in them? What's your take on that?
I mean, yeah, my take on it is, I mean, this is, again, athlete specific. So if we've got someone who's focusing on the bike, I'm guessing that is their weakness. That's what's holding them back and that's why they're focusing on it. And you'd hope for doing this a little way out from racing that, so you have enough time to, if you do go backwards in those maintenance disciplines, you have time to you know, really push them on again. I would balance it out with, if you're a beginner athlete, I would take a bit more stress out of those specific sessions, because actually, if you're only just beginning, you haven't done a lot of riding, you know, being riding in this example, being the discipline we're working on, then you're still going to get some stimulus and still going to get some adaptation from doing extra volume in that anyway, or increased volume in that. Whereas, you know, when you're looking at advanced athletes, they've probably got to push on the intensity a bit more because they've already done a fair bit of volume. So yeah, that is probably how I'd do it. And, you know, I wouldn't be worried about taking a bit longer to achieve your goals, because actually this sport is about consistency anyway. So I'd much rather see an athlete spend, you know, 6 weeks doing it than 4 weeks. There's two numbers I've come up the top of my head. Then, you know, then blowing up at 4 weeks because actually it was too intense. You know, triathlon, you know, it's been, really been drilled into me, and it's something I drill into other athletes as well, is actually it's going to be the consistency of taking off sessions. You've got to do it consistently week in, week out to get that kind of, you know, to get the most out of yourself. There's no such thing as a superhero session. So I'd hate to see beginner athletes going along and, you know, doing a superhero bike session, really smashing it, and then not being able to do anything for the rest of the week because I have seen that before. In conclusion, because I know I've blabbled a bit, yes, take some intensity out of it and just increase the volume if you are a real beginner athlete and that is something you're going to struggle with.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And the way that I would prescribe that or try to control that in coaching would be basically setting a session RPE limit for those hard sessions. So let's say they have a threshold session on the bike. I would say, look, this session should feel no harder than an 8 out of 10. If you get to the point where you feel you can't achieve that, then either reduce the intensity a bit, or maybe that's the time where you actually skip the last couple of intervals because you've already achieved the target for today, and it's better to stop when you have the ability to still recover in time for the next session and come back and fight that next day rather than, as you say, be forced to take more days of recovery or just get into the vicious cycle of trying to absolutely smash it day in, day out, because you can get away with that for a time, but then eventually it will catch up to you and you won't be able to push through anymore. And actually at that point, it's too late and you will probably have to have a couple of weeks at least of intensity because you took it too far and you can no longer hit the intensity no matter how hard you try. So basically having a bit of a cap on your effort in those intense sessions can be a good thing for the beginner athletes to make sure that you get the balance right.
And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. You're much better off slightly underdoing it and overdoing it, in my opinion, because if you have to take a couple of weeks off, look, you're probably just going to go backwards, so you just wasted 4 weeks of your time. The 2 weeks really intense and 2 weeks off, you know, you're probably not going to see anywhere near as much adaptation as if you're just doing it consistently and slightly easier. You know, you can always tell these things, you know, if once you get used to, you know, your power and, you know, your efforts. And I think for a beginner athlete, it is hard because it's hard to control, you know, it's hard to actually quantify how hard you're working and how much you've got left in the tank. And, you know, you are going to make mistakes for sure. You know, no one's going to go along, you know, I nailed every single session I did all my life, because no one's ever done that. I think, you know, unfortunately as being an athlete, part of this learning curve is going to be actually how far can you push yourself and how far is too much, and actually what is 8 out of 10, what does that actually feel like. You can do things like see where your power is starting to drop off, for example, but actually you have got to go and get the experience of doing that as well. So I don't want beginner athletes listening to this thing, you know, I don't really know what 8 out of 10 is, because I don't think many people do when they first start the sport. It's just you've got to make those mistakes, but when you make those mistakes, you've got to learn from them quickly. And that's going to be what helps with the consistency.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the benefits of coaching, obviously, that you can just fast track that progress through the learning and the education that the coach gives you around that and the discussions around, like, what did this session feel like? And the coach can help guide you in that direction. But let's move to the specific question here in terms of, so we talked about the advantages and the things, the considerations that need to be taken when doing a focus block like this. But the specific question here that David has is, can a crit training plan specifically on the bike be a good choice, as it might allow his FTP to grow and by building the top end? So what are your thoughts around that?
Well, it's actually really tough to answer this question without having seen David's data. So the answer is potentially. It really just depends on his weaknesses. So you know, I think the first thing that you've got to do if you're in David's situation is actually measure your functional reserve capacity, or W prime. And that W prime would represent your ability to work above critical power. So it's a fixed amount of work that can be performed above critical power. And, you know, its depletion rate depends on how far above critical power you are. So critical power, you know, I'm using that interchangeably with FTP because it's essentially the same thing. But essentially, you've got FTP, and as soon as you go over that level, you start to deplete W prime, which is like your battery, and the further above FTP you go or critical power you go, the quicker that is depleted. And from testing, we can see actually how much W prime you have, or you know, again, I'm using W prime and FRC interchangeably. So just be, I know I'm doing that. So just be aware of that. It's a real bad habit I've got. But yeah, you can see how much W prime you have. So how much ability to go above critical power you have, and therefore that getting those results from a critical power test, you can see actually where on the scale you'd be. So I'd say anyone with less than 15,000 joules of W prime is probably a diesel, and probably needs to push on their ability to produce energy, produce power above FTP. Whereas you might have someone like I deem it to be a Ferrari with 2,000 joules of energy as their W prime, and actually it's not really going to be that beneficial working on doing a crit program if that's your case. You know, when we look at triathlon, the most important number really is critical power, because that's your highest work rate, over a bike leg. The higher critical power is, the lower the overall intensity of a bike. So I think that's the key number. And I do think it's important not to get too bogged down with W prime. You know, critical power is the important number. But yeah, W prime is important. And I think it is, again, race specific. So look, I don't know what kind of racing David wants to do either. But actually, when you look at his percentage of FTP in a sprint, you know, he's going to be a lot closer to FTP in a sprint and possibly going, above it. So depleting that W prime, then he should be an Ironman. So maybe if you're doing an Ironman, there's not as great a need to do that work in W prime. Again, athlete specific, I've seen some very interesting athletes, and I have done some work on W prime with Ironman athletes, but a long way away from racing. And then again, if you're draft legal, having a good W prime is really advantageous, because you're going to do a lot of sprinting. You're going to have to go out of corners, and actually you don't choose how hard you're going to ride. It's kind of determined by the pack. So, if someone puts an effort in, you're going to have to respond. And, if your W prime is depleted and your FTP is not enough to keep up, you're going out the back. Again, looking at stochastic nature of courses, so you might be doing an individual Olympic, so you might be non-drafting Olympic, and actually going up hills, or again, quite a lot of corners, it's important to have a W prime to deal with that. But it is very event specific. So even in draft legal races, where I'd say it probably applies the most, if you've got a very flat course and the race turns into a bit of a roll around on the bike, or actually there's not many breakaways going away, or it's a solid effort at around FTP because your FTP is quite high, and you don't really expect to be going that much harder than it, then actually working W prime probably wouldn't help you so much. But you're going to turn up to some races in the year where your W prime, having a low W prime, is definitely going to be a limiting factor. I would definitely focus on after done a crit style training program, I'd definitely do a focus on FTP just to make sure that's as high as possible. Because like I say, you don't want to be, having a W prime above 2,000 joules, 20,000 joules, sorry, not 2,000, yeah, above 20,000 joules, and then an FTP that's, 60-70% of, your VO2 max, because your FTP is still going to be the most important number there. Does that all make sense?
It does, yeah. And I would just draw the attention to the fact that there is a correlation between a W prime or a high FRC and a high VLA max as well. It's a correlation. Like, they're not the same thing. That's not what it means, but there's a correlation. And so if you are somebody focusing on especially non-draft racing, steady state riding, and especially when it comes to the longer races, but even things like an Olympic non-draft, depending on the course, as you say, that the course really has a lot to do with this, but then you don't want to have that VLA max too high, and equally a too high FRC or W prime could be an indication that your critical power or your FTP is much lower than it could be, because basically you're too glycolytic. So that's another aspect of it. One more thing that comes to mind is that even though the W prime is one of the main things that you're trying to work on for your crit program. I also think that potentially like a one main effect or even a side effect would be that it could be good as a VO2 max boosting training plan. And in that situation, I do think that a lot of athletes have VO2 max as a limiter, and it could be actually a really great thing to get that up. And even if you're somebody who doesn't necessarily benefit from an increase in W prime, then like taking that, if you can also get a VO2 max increase, can be fine in many cases. And then you can basically work on your threshold exactly as you said and bring that threshold closer to your VO2 max. So as David also asked in his question, yes, I do think that it can be potentially a good thing to raise his ceiling by increasing the VO2 max through that crit plan and then that allowing his room for his FTP to grow. But it comes back to what you first mentioned when you started answering this. Like, you would like to see his data. You would like to have him go through some sort of testing and see where he is. And that's how you can ultimately make a good informed decision about whether that is a good type of training plan for him to focus on his weakness.
Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately why, you know, you wouldn't just give everyone the same training plan because, yeah, it could be great for David, but David, this could also be the worst thing you'd be doing. It wouldn't be terrible, but it could be something that you're kind of wasting your time doing it. But hopefully it's not. And hopefully it's, you know, this is a limiting factor. You know, like you say, I do agree with a VO2 max. You know, actually, you know, from an athlete side of things, I've done a lot of training like this, but I race Draft Legal. And, you know, in terms of raising VO2 max, I think it is quite useful. But yeah, I think like you've already alluded to, and I've already alluded to, it's very athlete specific. We won't see a David, really.
Yeah. Now, another related question to this, how would you think that these things that we've been discussing so far apply to swimming and running if one of those disciplines is your weakness? Is it essentially the same things we've already been talking about, or are there any specific considerations for those disciplines that we should mention for those listeners that might be in a position where they want to focus on one of those other disciplines?
Yeah, I think there is. I think it does apply to swimming and running as well, definitely. But there are definitely areas, you know, we need to consider when I'm doing that. So the first thing would be, I wouldn't just go and apply the same amount of intensity from your bike program and put it into a run program because of the injury risk. And again, it's going to depend on your history as an athlete and actually how much intensity you can handle. So if you're an athlete that gets injured quite easily, you know, you wouldn't want to be doing the same amount of intensity that I imagine David is doing in his crit program. Swimming's different. You know, I think you can handle a lot of intensity in swimming, but actually you've also got to take into account the limiting factors when it comes into each sport. So yes, if you are an athlete who is definitely limited by their ability to go, you know, at VO2 max intensity, because that's kind of what I'd deem the crit kind of program to be, more of a VO2 max intensity block when you put it into swimming. You've got to make sure that your technique is not falling to pieces whilst you do that, because there's no use, you know, you're doing really hard efforts in the pool, but your swimming economy, basically, which is what I mean when I say swim technique, is falling to pieces. You've got to have good swim technique and good swim economy to make you go faster through the water. It's no use just flapping your arms about. So I think that's definitely something to be considerate of. So actually, can I hold my technique while I'm doing these sessions? And is my technique good enough to actually propel me through the water? And yes, on the running side of things, just being wary of the intensity and looking at actually how much intensity you can handle and where you've been injured in the past, or actually where you know, if you know yourself well, actually what is the limit to how far you should push yourself? That would be my considerations.
Yeah, I would agree. And just a couple of things to add. On the running side, I would say that you can do some or even all of your intensity, probably some, not all, but some of it uphill. That would decrease the impact forces to make it slightly more safe, less riskful for you to do the intensity, but that's not an excuse to go and do the same amount of intensity that you would do in your bike training program. That's just to make the intensity that you actually can handle on the run even a little bit more safe than it already might be, and maybe increase a little bit, but definitely not to the same amount of intensity that you would have in a crit training program. Because it's just simply the nature of the sport that running is the one where you're most likely to get injured. And with swimming, I think that, as you say, you can handle a lot of intensity, but don't forget about technique. Also, don't forget about the base endurance. I think that because of the fact that, or because of the way that, for example, master swim squads are run, it's sort of, I guess, inherent in many of us that actually you can go and do 4 or 5 swims per week and they can all be pretty intense. And yes, you can get away with that, but I actually think that you're missing a lot of the point, a lot of development, because it is an endurance sport. So actually you need to make sure that you still have the endurance training in the swim as well, just like you wouldn't do 5 intense bike rides per week or 5 intense runs per week. You would have that aerobic endurance in there. But in the swimming, I think it's much easier for athletes to kind of just forget about that and not realize the importance of that as a stimulus in its own. So I think that's something to consider as well with the swimming.
Yeah, and I think it's also, this is, you know, around this point, also actually how you measure whether you need to, I know this is probably the next question as well, but actually measuring what your weaknesses are is slightly different. I mean, you can perform a critical power test or look at your FRC running if you're running with power, but actually maybe the tests are slightly different. And, you know, especially if you're looking at swimming, obviously you can't swim with power, so you're probably looking at different, you know, different ways of measuring it. So, you know, you're probably looking at your times and how it's falling to pieces, you know, as you go up. So maybe you look at your 100 meter time, your 200 meter time, 400 meter time, and 1500 meter time to gauge whether or not you need to work on your swimming, and whether actually that kind of VO2 max, you know, which is again what I'm calling this, is a crit program in a swim, is actually that area you need to work on. I don't know if you agree with that, Michael.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think that the way I sort of thought about this question is more about the general aspect of blocking or a focus block in itself, not so much whether it's a VO2 max block or a threshold block or whatever it is, volume block. But just, yeah, but well, I guess that otherwise if we don't like limit it to some way, we would be here discussing this all day. But yeah, I mean, in terms of intensity in general, I would say the exact same thing, whether we're talking about threshold training or VO2 max training, there's still the same things apply. You can only do so much threshold training on the run before you really run the risk of injuring yourself. And with swimming, as well, like we all know this, if we've done like a 2000 meter threshold set, that it's very easy for your technique to really fall apart. So maybe you need to sort of draw the line somewhere to make sure that you get the technique. And even though you think that you can do threshold swimming every day, the same thing applies. You need to get in that aerobic endurance as well. So yeah, that's where I was coming from with that sort of question, not so much just the VO2 max, but the block focus in itself. You alluded to it already. The final part that we are going to discuss here is just the general thoughts around how to make better, more educated guesses on what is actually the type of training that you should be doing to get the most benefit from these types of blocks, or in general, just get past plateau.
Yeah. So there's as I'm sure listeners know, there's loads of tests out there. And in terms of this question, so around the crit training, whether or not that would be useful for you, I would actually want to work out, you know, my FRC W prime. So I think the easiest way to do that is to use some software like WKO and actually just input a 1 minute max, a 3 minute max, 5 minute max, 10 minute max. So a multitude of different efforts across different durations. Put that into WKO5 and it'll give you your FRC. And your FRC is low, you know, you need to work on it. If your FRC is quite high, then, you know, don't worry so much about it. You can do that with critical power as well. So plot your critical power as a straight line. So you do an FTP test to work that out. On the y-axis, you'd have power. On the x-axis, you'd have time. And you plot y equals mx plus c, where m is, so the slope of m is, again, critical power, and the y-intercept is c. The intercept is a is W prime. So I muddled that up. But yes, that's how I do it if you didn't have WKO5. And other things I want to know. So you've come out of that and you've worked out actually where your FRC is and actually whether that's a limiting factor. I'd also want to know, just because I'd be interested to know actually what my limiting factors are. I'd want to do a VO2 max test and maybe a ramp test to work out where my second threshold and first threshold are. So yes, we get these numbers off Garmin or off your training device that predicts your VO2 max. And, you know, I've had some interesting results when I compare that to lab testing. I don't know if I've fed it the right data. I haven't really gone into that too much, if I'm honest. But I want to know what my VO2 max is, and I want to know what my...
Can you give an example of that? How they have differed, the VO2 max from your Garmin and the lab test?
So for example, I've done a lot of lab testing. So when you get your Garmin device, and it usually goes something like, you've got a new VO2 max, it might be like 67 or something. You know, you've done a great workout, you got a new VO2 max, and, I know for a fact that it's because I haven't probably fed it with the right data that it's not actually near what I've had tested in the lab. And I've seen it across a multitude of areas. And, you know, it also depends on whether you're keeping your weight up to date. But I think the best thing to do is to go and test it in the lab if you can. But yes, I don't think it's a bad proxy if you feed it with the right data and you're consistently training with that Garmin or training with that computer. I think it probably could get to a fairly decent accuracy level. I don't know too much about that, and I don't want to get into actually how accurate that is, because I haven't done the research around it. I just know that actually, in terms of when I've looked at it and what I know of the athletes I coach and myself, I'm not seeing it to be terribly accurate.
Just to chime in here, I'm not super familiar with the actual algorithms behind it, but I've read a little bit about just the takeaways around the accuracy from independent writers and researchers, and I actually think there are some peer-reviewed papers on this, but I can't remember. Anyway, yeah, my takeaway would be that actually I would not trust it at all. There are basically a lot of places where it can go wrong. It's actually something. I think that one issue is that it depends a lot on heart rate, and I think that's an issue. And I see it in the caloric estimations of my Garmins. When it estimates calories for me, because I tend to be a low heart rate kind of athlete, like it's just way, way low. And I know that I'm expending a lot more calories for a run than what my Garmin estimates. And I think that that's basically a big fallacy. I think they make some assumptions around heart rate that just don't apply. They might be good on average, but they can be horribly wrong for the individual athlete.
That's kind of what I was trying to say. Yeah, I just don't want to get too involved in that argument, because I know there's going to be people out there who really strongly believe in it. But yeah, I don't think it's accurate in summary. But yeah, go and do a VO2. Going back to the original question, I'd go and do a VO2 max test if possible, a ramp test, work out where your thresholds are, and then you can see what is limiting you. I think that's really important. You can see that actually if your second threshold is 85 to 90% of VO2 max, actually you need to push on your VO2 max. So maybe then you could go and look at your FRC, because I think that the most important values in triathlon are your first and second thresholds. So you need to know where they are, because actually they're going to determine your race result. You then go and look at actually, are they being limited by your VO2 max? And if the case is yes, you need to push in your VO2 max. And then it might be a good idea to do something like a crit training program if your racing is going to be quite stochastic, or you're going to spend a lot of time above critical power. And they're the tests I would do. You could obviously do an inside test as well to actually work out where your VLA max is. And then, as you already alluded to, there's a correlation between VLA max and how high your W prime is. So that would be quite useful as well. So they are the tests I would do in summary.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Do some sort of physiological testing. Also, obviously, work with a coach who can use their experience in working with athletes like you and determine based on your situation, your athletic and physiological profile, what might be best for you. Coaches that have had that experience in the past, they are in a good position to make much better educated guesses on what might work. And then, but if you're doing this yourself, then basically test one variable at a time. Like, for example, you might start by focusing on volume. Just increase your volume. Don't change your intensity at all on your one focus discipline, and do that for a few weeks and see how that works. Maybe you do something like some sort of critical power test before and after, and then you can get some specific data around that. And then you can do a block where you do some sort of specific form of intensity as your focus. Maybe you do some VO2 max sessions because you determine that that's where you're lacking. You're limited by your VO2 max. Your threshold, your FTP is already at a high percent of it. So you can do that. But basically, to get a better ID, work on one variable at a time. It could even be something on the workout level. Maybe you just need to make your long rides longer. That could be a great thing for raising your first threshold in particular to do some really good sort of long rides. If you're only ever going 2 hours, try to build that up to going 4 hours on a weekly basis on the bike. And so test one variable at a time. There are plenty of options, but those are a few examples. And some other things that you could do is to look at your 30 to 90 day training intensity distribution. If you're using Training Peaks or WKO, you can do this very easily and see in what zones. Obviously, make sure that you have your zones set correctly and so on. Have you been spending time? And see if there are areas that you really haven't touched much. And then basically just have a discussion with yourself. Are those potential areas for improvement? Or actually, is the reason that you haven't touched them much that actually you don't need to touch them much because they aren't your weakness? So just because you haven't been training a particular zone or area doesn't mean that you should. But looking at your training intensity distribution can give you some ideas, some starting points for where you might want to take your training next. And then finally, especially if you're working with WKO, look at your power duration curve. This is a bit of what you already mentioned, James. If you have a few maximum efforts of 1, 3, 5, and 10 minutes, then you have a good power duration curve. WKO actually only requires 3 maximum efforts. So you could have a 30-second max effort, a 5-minute max effort, and a 20-minute max effort, and you would get really good data. And if your power duration curve is very flat, meaning it's quite low power at the short end, so your 5-second power and your 10-second power and your 30-second power is relatively low, then it might be, well, those are just, if you're a cyclist, obviously a sign that you could work on your top end power. For a triathlete, you might be more interested in how does your 5 minutes power compare to your 20 minute or 1 hour power, and basically that way you can get an insight into what parts of the curve you need to work. But do note that using the power duration curve is something that it requires good data in. You need to make sure that you have good data in, good data integrity. So it's very easy to come to incorrect conclusions using it. So be careful with that. You need to have a good understanding of how to use it, to actually use it effectively. But when you get to that level, then it's a very powerful tool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I just add around that. I think I alluded to it earlier, different disciplines. So, you know, I know this is questions around cycling, but maybe if you're swimming, again, I'd go and get some data. You know, you can't measure power, but I'd go and do it across different durations or different events. So maybe like I've already said, like a 50 meter, a 200 meter, a 400 meter. And, you know, if you're quite an advanced athlete who's not going to fall completely off a wall, 1500 meters as well. And just see, actually, you know, actually, because when you apply this kind of thing to swimming, you don't get the power duration curve because there's no way of working that out. So you kind of have to use those times as a proxy to see actually where you need to push on.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of testing for the swim, maybe your test would be a video analysis. Maybe you are actually quite limited by your technique, and that's something that the video analysis can reveal. And your focus might not be so much on the intensity side, but just on ironing out some technical flaws. And obviously, like, I think that it's something that we both agree on, that unless you're like really a beginner in terms of swimming and somebody who's really slow and just getting started with it and learning the technique, that's a different story. But if you're somebody who's been swimming for a while, then it doesn't mean that you completely skip intensity just because you have some technical mistakes to figure out and work on. But it simply means that maybe the main focus of your next few weeks isn't so much on the intensity, even if you do some of that, but it's more so about getting your stroke a bit improved.
Yeah, I always think of it. I know this is slightly going off topic, but because I do a bit of swim coaching as well with a swim squad, and I always say that actually, yes, it's important to have good technique, but you got to have good technique when you're swimming at race pace, because you know actually that's where you want to have good economy. And if you're never practicing race pace, you're never practicing swimming race pace with good technique. And I just like to, yeah, I think I should throw that in there. You know, yes, you can get really, really technically good at swimming very slow, but it's not going to help you on race day, if that's the case.
Totally. All right. Anything else we should add to this, James, or are you happy with what we covered?
I think I've blabbered on enough. I hope I made sense. I think I'm happy with what we've covered.
Yeah, I think so too. I think this covers a lot, both in terms of the specific question and the general theme around it. So thank you so much for joining me for today's Q&A, and look forward to chatting on another time in the future on the Q&A or another podcast. That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed that Q&A co-hosted by James. Keep sending in questions for future Q&A episodes to michael@scientifictriathlon.com, and that's Michael with a K. You can find James on Instagram. His handle is @James_Teagle. And of course, he is on scientifictriathlon.com on the coaching page, where you can read more about his bio and his coaching and so on. And on that note, if you are interested in coaching or training plans, whether they be ready-made or customized, you can find more information about all of that on scientifictriathlon.com. Go and check it out if you want to take your triathlon performance to the next level. Big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Hydration, that you can find on precisionhydration.com. Go and get your free hydration strategy for your next race and get 15% off your order of electrolytes with the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW15. And big thanks to Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Check out their wetsuits, trisuits, swimskins, goggles, and high-performance eyewear and prescription glasses and sunglasses, and get 20% off your order with the promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.